Between the months of June and November back in 1980, a bizarre strange of events took place in the small town of Tobenden that today still remain unsolved. And for several weeks leading up to and after the 6th of June, reports of strange lights in the night sky were being received by the Tobenden police who, despite investigating them, could never give a definitive answer as to what they were. Despite a flurry of phone calls and people going to the police station to report what they had been seeing, one of the most strangest and what would soon be one of the UK's most high-profile cases of what we now call the UFO phenomena, as well as alien abduction, would soon take place. On the 28th of November 1980, Police Constable Alan Godfrey, who was based at the Tobenden branch of the West Yorkshire Metropolitan Police Force, had been sent out to check on reports of cattle wandering around a local estate. Now, his shift was supposed to finish at 6 a.m. that morning, but at around 5:15 a.m, and as he was travelling along Burnley Road in his Ford Escort Panda, he was about to turn right onto Fernie Lee Road when suddenly, and apparently out of nowhere, a bright light appeared in front of him. Stopping his police car, what Godfrey saw that night would possibly be the accumulation of events that had not only engulfed the residents of Tobenden leading up to this point, but also something more sinister for Godfrey himself. Now, 6 months earlier, and on the 11th of June at around 3:45 p.m, Trevor Parker was entering his father's coal yard that was situated close by to Tobenden train station, and he came across the body of a man lying on his back and on top of a 10-foot-high coal heap. Now, startled by this discovery, he telephoned for an ambulance, which duly arrived, and around 30 minutes later, and after this discovery, two police officers arrived to attend to the scene. Now, those officers were PC Malcolm Agley and also that of PC Alan Godfrey. Upon their arrival, they quickly presumed that the man had died from a heart attack, but the scene itself was one that was puzzling in its nature. The first strange oddity was where he was found lying. The coal heap was around 10 feet high, and none of the coal seemed out of place, in that it didn't appear that any of it had been disturbed by someone or some people having to walk up it. The body of the man also didn't have any signs of coal dust on his shoes or hands, which may have indicated that he had climbed up the coal heap himself. Next was the man's clothing. It seemed he had rushed to get himself dressed as his appearance was one that appeared uneven, with some of his clothing not properly fastened. The zip on his trousers was down, his shoelaces were untied. He was also wearing a suit, but his shirt was missing. His whole appearance just didn't seem right. Upon further investigation, Godfrey noticed strange burn marks at the back of the man's head and neck, which also appeared to have a gel-like substance smeared over them. A post-mortem on the body of the deceased man took place that same evening at around 9 p.m, and this took place over in the nearby Hebden Bridge, and it would soon transpire that the body was that of 56-year-old miner by the name of Zygmunt Adamski. Adamski was a resident of Tingley, near Wakefield, which is around 38 miles from where his body was found, and it appears that he had left his home in Thornfield Crescent at around 3:30 p.m. on Friday, 9th of June, to visit a local shop. It was the last time that Polish-born Adamski was ever seen alive again. His whereabouts during the 5 days he was missing have always remained a mystery, and several theories have since emerged, which include kidnapping and involvement with the KGB and, of course, alien abduction. As for the post-mortem, details emerged that along with the strange manner in which his body was found and how disorganised his clothing was, it seems that he had only 1 day worth of beard growth, indicating that he had been alive during the 5 days he was missing, and that he had been somewhere that had allowed him the opportunity to shave. This is where the theory of kidnapping seems to stem from, and that in the lead up to his disappearance, he and his wife had allowed a family member to stay with them as she had put up a restraining order against her husband. Now, while there is no proof or evidence ever being found to implicate the husband in the disappearance of Adamski, many people think it's more than plausible that he was indeed held captive for those 5 missing days, perhaps even being tortured during this time, thus the marks being found on the back of his head. And during this period, he may suddenly have died from a heart attack, and his captors disposed of his body on the coal heap over in Tobenden. Some think the husband may have been behind the kidnapping, whilst not directly being with Adamski during those missing 5 days. But like I say, no definitive proof has ever been found. As for the KGB theory, well, Adamski had been living in England for 40 years and had worked hard since arriving. He was a miner who had worked at Lofthouse Colliery, but had wanted to retire due to ill health as well as wanting to be his wife's full-time carer, who was wheelchair-bound. The post-mortem also revealed details regarding his general health, saying that it appeared he was clean and well cared for, and it didn't appear that he had been sleeping rough, and, as we have already mentioned, he had only one day's beard growth, indicating he had access to amenities. As for the burn marks found on his head, they may have been caused by a hot or corrosive fluid, and it seemed to have been caused at least 2 days before his death. But most intriguingly, his wife, Leocadia, or Lottie as she was commonly known, stated in court that she thought her husband had been scared to death, such was the expression on his face when his body had been found. To back this up, even PC Goffrey, one of the first police constables to attend to the scene, had also remarked on the frightened facial expression Adamski had when he first saw the body. Goffrey said he would never forget the look on Mr. Adamski's face. "Those eyes were staring up at me. I was looking down at him from a foot away. Those eyes sent a shudder down my spine. They were wide open. He had the look of someone who had seen something or someone that had scared him to death." He also added, "Something or someone put him on top of that pile of coal, and something scared him to death." As for the gel-like substance found around the burn marks on the back of Adamski's head and neck, samples were taken and sent off for analysis, but it appears it could not be identified by forensic scientists. Proceedings were soon adjourned by the coroner, who said that they should not leave any stone unturned whilst investigating the matter further, and whatever can be done will be done. I shall see to that. Further proceedings would take place on the 4th of September, with the final proceeding taking place on the 25th of September, but neither could produce any real evidence of what had occurred from the 6th of June up until the discovery of Adamski's body on the 11th of June, and to this day the case still remains unsolved. As already mentioned, many theories and conspiracies have been spoken and written about, but none have fully explained how Adamski's body ended up on the 10-foot coal heap and what had happened to him over 5 days of his disappearance. So this then brings us back to the evening of Friday, 28th November 1980, and to the strange events witnessed by PC Alan Goffrey. It seems extremely strange that Goffrey was one of the first constables to attend to the scene of Adamski only 6 months prior, and one that had led to many stories of alien abduction being touted as to the cause of this disappearance, and now here he was encountering another strange occurrence less than a mile from where Adamski's body was first discovered. Just before midnight, Tomenden Police Station received a call from a resident at a nearby council estate reporting that a herd of cows were wandering the houses, causing a bit of nuisance. With the evening being somewhat quiet, this would be a job that could easily be followed up. Goffrey, who hadn't been on duty for long, and as he was making his way to the estate, another report came through from another resident, making a similar claim about the cattle. Despite his searches, and after driving up and down for almost all of the avenues, there were no sign of these cows. It was a very wet evening, with rain pouring down heavily at times, and it seemed like the people of Tomenden were set for another extremely harsh upcoming winter. With no sign of any cows, Goffrey decided to report back to the station, saying that the calls may have been a hoax, but he then received another radio message asking him to go back to the estate because a third resident had now reported being awakened by a loud noise coming from her garden. The lady in question has never been named, just in order to prevent her from becoming a figure of fun, but as Goffrey describes in his book, Who or What Were They?, she had said to him, "I know I'm old, but I'm not bloody senile." What she went on to describe to him, he had kept confident. She revealed that she was woken by strange noises coming from her garden, and after peering through a bedroom window, she had seen 5 to 6 cows moving about in the darkness. This is when she called the police station. However, when she went downstairs to use the phone, which was situated on the front window ledge, she pulled open the curtains slightly to describe what the cows were doing. Now, after ending the call to the police station, as she was putting down the receiver, an extremely bright glow, like a car headlight that had suddenly gone onto full beam, lit up the window, and within a second or so, everything went dark. When she looked back out of the window, all the cows had vanished. Goffrey just assumed that this would have been a car passing by, and its headlights had more than likely scared away the cows. It seemed a logical explanation at the time. After speaking to the lady, Goffrey made his way back around the estate for one last check, just to see if he could spot the roaming cattle, and despite his searching, he found nothing, so returned back to the station full of frustration. Hours later, and as his shift was coming to an end and the rain had finally stopped but a low cloud had drifted over the town, it made for an eerie environment. Finishing off some paperwork, Godfrey was informed by a colleague that he was going to knock off duty an hour early as it was 5 a.m. Leaving the station together, his colleague headed off to a nearby police flats, while Godfrey got himself into the police car before beginning his drive into the town centre where he could check things out. In the centre of Tomerden, Godfrey met another police officer who was on foot patrol. Pulling alongside him, Godfrey offered the officer a lift just to get him out of the chilly air, as well as keeping him company in the final hours of his shift, but the officer kindly refused. Godfrey then told him he was going to have one final look for those bloody cows. As Godfrey set off, he would soon leave Tomerden Centre, passing the police station on his right-hand side of the road. It was around 5:10 a.m. and the street was very quiet. About half a mile or so along Burnley Road, and as he neared Fernley Road, Godfrey caught sight of something several hundred yards in front of him. At first he thought it was the staff bus that carried other officers to and from the police station, but he quickly remembered passing it in town, and it was also too early for any of the other actual buses to be running. Curious as to what the object was that was in the road ahead, Godfrey carried along Burnley Road, and as he got closer, he soon realised that whatever it was blocking the entire road. As he inched closer, his car would soon come to a crawl, until the object in front of him was almost covering his entire windscreen. "What the hell is this?" Godfrey began saying to himself. The object, which was no more than 20 yards away, was hanging around 5 feet off the road surface. It was diamond-shaped and appeared to be roughly 20 feet wide and 14 feet in height. It also had a row of dark panelling across the upper top of it. As he stared at the object, there seemed to be a fluorescent glow coming from a larger dome on the top, and the whole thing was spinning slowly in an anti-clockwise direction. Godfrey was stunned from what he was seeing, and after a few months passed, his training as a police officer suddenly snapped him out of his bemusement. He put on the hazards of the police car as well as the blue flashing beacon on the top of his car. He then attempted to radio the local control room at Sowerby Bridge Police Station, but nothing happened. For some reason, his personal UHF radio just wouldn't work. However, it wasn't uncommon for this to happen, as the town was situated at the bottom of a valley and signals could be hard to get through. Therefore, he tried again using the police car's VHF radio, which was usually more reliable, but again, he was unable to make any contact. Unsure of what to do next, Godfrey's first thought was to leave the area and get back to the station and bring someone else out to see what he was watching, but experience took over and Godfrey, after calming himself down, took out his notepad and with a pencil he quickly managed to sketch the object in front of him. The trees that lined the road were shaking violently, but when he was sat in his car, he would tell at future interviews that there was no vibrations and that there was certainly no noise. As he was drawing the object, a sudden flash of light appeared and he found himself 50 to 100 yards further down the road than where he had first stopped his car, and the object he had sketched only a matter of seconds ago had disappeared. Godfrey drove back to where he originally had pulled over, only to find the ground around him completely dry, despite it having rained. A bus travelling on the opposite side of the road soon appeared, and still in an obvious state of confusion, Godfrey spoke with the bus driver, who also noticed the same thing. One stretch of the road was completely dry. By now, realisation suddenly hit him and Godfrey felt vulnerable. Jumping back into his car, he drove off to head back to the police station. And upon arriving, PC Malcolm Agley was just making his way into the station after himself ending his own patrol that morning. Shouting out from his window, Agley looked puzzled when Godfrey told him to get in the passenger seat. Doing a quick U-turn, Godfrey then set off to where he had seen the bizarre sight in the middle of the road. He was babbling about the events that had occurred only a few minutes prior, and as they pulled up and got out of the car, Agley himself seemed puzzled at what he was looking at. Now, the object had long since disappeared, but it had left behind a bizarre scene in which the road surface below where the object was hovering was bone dry, whereas the surrounding areas were wet from the rain. There was also a strange swirl of leaves that seemed out of place. Bending down, the two men touched the ground and it felt to be warm to the touch, and which again this seemed out of place due to the coldness of that late November air. After telling Agley of his strange encounter, both officers decided to see if anyone else was around who might have witnessed the event, and next to them was the Centervale car park. Unfortunately, the gates were locked. But undeterred, they both climbed over the tall gates and made their way into the fields, moving slowly along the pathway. Nobody was in the park at that time of morning, but something else was. Shining their torches in front of them, both men jumped back as Godfrey's torch illuminated the outline of a cow, and then more cows started to appear from the darkness. Now, what makes this more strange is that cattle had never grazed in that park. So were these the same cows that Godfrey had been out looking for only a few hours before? And if so, how did they end up in a field when all the gates had been locked? Returning back at the police station at around 6:30 a.m, Godfrey still couldn't explain what had occurred on Burnley Road, but his experience would soon take another strange turn as, when he looked at one of the clocks in the building, he couldn't account for 25 minutes of missing time. Not only that, one of his boots had a split to which was not there before or during his shift that evening. Godfrey himself recalled thinking at the time that it was rather odd that both he and Agley had arrived back at the police station so late in the morning, but he wasn't also sure how long they had been wandering around in the park. The following evening, Godfrey would be told of five other police officers who were attending an accident on the moors above Tomenden and who had seen a glowing light in the distance and near to or where Godfrey would, an hour later, encounter the strange object on Burnley Road. One of them, PC John Porter, described it as being like a very cold steel blue light. After hearing of this, Godfrey submitted an official report detailing what had happened in those early hours, something he would perhaps later come to regret. Now another witness, that of school caretaker Leonard Smith, who had seen a bright light zigzagging over the same area where Godfrey had his experience, also came forward with what he had seen. Obviously, he didn't know what Godfrey was or had gone through at that same time of morning. Godfrey would soon begin to face immense pressure, which he himself would later come out and say at times he felt like he was being forced out of his job, and eventually he made the decision to retire from the police force. But rather than just sit back and hope that the furor surrounding him would quietly go away, instead he would spend hours and hours going through the event, trying to understand exactly what had happened, and several months later, and after being arranged by a solicitor, Harry Harris, Godfrey made the bold decision to undertake hypnosis. This would reveal some extremely interesting and disturbing information. Under hypnosis, Godfrey recalled getting out of his police car and made his way over to the craft. But upon getting close, a beam of light emitted from the craft, hitting him directly onto the chest. He then remembered feeling the sensation of weightlessness as he was brought into the craft. At this point, everything went dark, and when he recovered consciousness, he found himself face to face with a tall humanoid figure around 6 foot tall. The figure then asked Godfrey to get onto a table. According to Godfrey, the man, who would become known as Yosef, then spoke to him telepathically, telling him to lie still and everything would be fine. Strangely, Godfrey would tell under hypnosis how he felt safe and that it felt like he had met this figure before.
Then I wake up in a room. Now in this room, there is a very tall humanoid, for want of a better word. He's about 6 foot to 6 foot six, very tall, thin, with a beard. He had a skull cap on and he had this white gown on. What happens then is...
Lying still, eight small beings with bulb-shaped heads and large black eyes appeared and began performing medical examinations on him. This seemingly went on for several minutes until Godfrey, it seems, became stressed and the beings ended their examinations on him, telling him they feared he might be having a heart attack. Consciously, Godfrey had no recollection of any of this, but as a police constable who was on duty in those early hours of the morning and who had the foresight to sketch what he was seeing at the time, something certainly did occur at 5:15 a.m. that morning. Some experts think he was just hallucinating due to working long hours and stressed by his job. Others think he simply misinterpreted what he saw, saying it was probably a plane or a helicopter flying overhead. But when all said and done, one has to believe in what Godfrey put in his official report. After all, he was a well-respected but no-nonsense police officer who was experienced in his job. In all fairness to Godfrey, he himself would later admit that perhaps the hypnosis may not have been accurate, as he had been reading the story of the Betty and Barney Hill abduction case. Now, this occurred in New Hampshire, America in 1961, and he felt that maybe his subconscious was simply relaying what he had read in the book. Years later, Godfrey would come to terms with his experiences, and with popular TV shows such as The X-Files and Quantum Leap perhaps, whetting the appetites of millions of people across the world, he would soon find himself inundated with requests to appear on chat shows, all eager to jump on the bandwagon that the UFO phenomena had seemingly created. The 90s was, we can safely say, one that brought the subject of UFOs and alien abduction into many people's homes, and stories were abound of people all claiming to have been abducted, and it seemed that Godfrey's story was only the tip of the iceberg. But perhaps one of the most widely known accounts of alien abduction is that of Travis Walton, an American forestry worker who, after finishing his shift with six co-workers, saw a strange light in the sky whilst they were leaving their Apache Site Greaves National Forest near Snowflake, Arizona. Making their way to where the light was emitting from, upon their arrival, Walton left the truck they were travelling in, and just like Godfrey, he walked over to the solid object that was immersed in light. And just like in Godfrey's case, he was struck in the chest by a bright light that came from the object, which was floating slightly off the ground. He instantly blacked out, but when he awoke, he also found himself lying on an examination table. And Walton, just like in the case of Zygmunt Adamski, would go missing for 5 days after the encounter with the object in the forest. The similarities with that of Walton and Godfrey are strikingly similar in nature. Both had approached a solid object that was floating slightly off the ground. Both blacked out, but under hypnosis they would tell of how they walked to find themselves lying on the table surrounded by strange looking beings. Both would also tell of experiments being performed on them. The hypnosis sessions Godfrey undertook, and there were three in total, never really resolved the questions Godfrey wanted answering. He himself questions whether parts of the story are fact or fiction, or a mixture of the two, but there is no way for him to be sure. Whilst he does maintain that something bizarre definitely occurred in the small hours of that November morning, and he firmly believes that what he had encountered was indeed a UFO, it is under hypnosis and after being examined by a tall being named Joseph, with eight small beings surrounding him, that he can never be sure of. Was this a story invented by his mind playing tricks on him, resulting from reading the story of Bette and Barney Hill? So the strange death of Zygmunt Adamski and the UFO sighting by Godfrey, which were two closely linked events that occurred in the small town of Tomerden, surely cannot be coincidence, can it? Alan Godfrey has spent the last 40 years recounting the events that took place back in 1980, and you can listen to and watch many interviews simply by searching his name over on YouTube. Now, we did manage to contact Alan with a view to speaking with him directly about his life in the police force and, of course, his story on what took place in November 1980, but he politely declined our request, confirming that he no longer does interviews due to ill health and also spending the last 40 years retelling the story. If you wish to know more about his fascinating life as a police officer and, of course, the two events that ultimately shaped his life, then please visit his website where you can order his book, Who or What Were They, by visiting his website www.alangodfreyufo.com. Now, this is something completely different than what I normally do. If you did like this story and you like UFO related or paranormal supernatural stories, comment down below. You can contact me also on Twitter and on Instagram. Links again are on the website www.daysofhorror.com. In the meantime, as I always say at the end of every story, take care, look after yourselves, and I will be back soon with another tale from the past.